This is KWAI, Honolulu, 1080 on the AM dial.
It's time for the Carol Cox Show on K108, heard every Sunday from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. If you have questions for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080.
Good morning and welcome to the Carol Cox Show. We're back here today on Sunday, Super Bowl Day. And again, like I say, thank you for joining us. And man, the numbers are growing. And I appreciate all of you for listening in and tuning in and going to the website at carol@carolcox.com. It's exponentially increasing by the thousands. And so quite impressed, and I'll try to do my best to continue to bring you some good news and some entertainment and some opportunities to see what's happening here. Today I have City Council Member Tom Berg. He's going to be my guest, and we're going to be talking about a couple of things and sewers and the Waianae Coast, and maybe we can get enlightened on some of the insight that he has and his experiences. And there are just simply, if you'd like to call in, 524-1080, 524-1080 is the number. Good morning, Councilman Berg. How are you?
Oh, good morning. It's a pleasure to be on your show. I'm a fan.
Yeah, well, thank you. And it's growing. I don't know who's listening, but... Well, anyway, thank you for joining me, and I wanted to... First of all, I know we want to talk about the rail and want to talk about anything, the infrastructure that we're not attending to. And so could you just basically give us some background? who you are, where you come from, basically, and, you know, as they say, where you been and where you going.
Well, I was never wanting to be a political wannabe myself. I enjoyed working 11 years at the state capitol here for a previous representative, senator, and enjoyed making sure that the nuts and bolts were getting taken care of, and the capital improvement projects that my bosses were after, and really tried to shepherd in and work hard, and got to really meet a lot of good folks and walk the district time and time again. And just under certain circumstances, after some period of time, it turned out that my political, those that I wanted to either be for mayor or for president, jeopardized my employment. It didn't match up to my employer, and so took a break, wound up separating, and going out on my own, and threw my hat in the ring and lost twice for state house, and then there was a special election for city council, and I was one of 14 candidates, and you know, we could talk about politics 101 in how I got in, but anyway, I'm here fulfilling the term of Councilman Totopo, the 2 years remaining left on his term when he resigned, and I'll be back in the thicket again. So prior to that, came from Minneapolis, and I'm born in Chicago.
You poor thing.
So I'm still thawing out.
Okay. Born in Chicago. Okay. Well, I've lived there for a while, and a nice place, so I understand. Just too cold come wintertime. So you were like the geese. You migrated out here.
That's right. That's right. My background in college was anthropology and archaeology, and I, being from Minneapolis where I grew up, it's the American Indian movement, very strong there. Dennis Banks, Clyde Bellacourt, Russ, all the folks there that got, the second wounded knee and taking over the Bureau of Indian Affairs and all that happened in the 70s. You know, that was my childhood, and I saw the fight and the plight. The largest mass execution in United States history, just taking about an hour southwest of Minneapolis, out in Mankato, where they're planning to hang over 300 Dakota Sioux for so-called crime committed by three or four individuals, and they wound up hanging 38. So talk about lack of trial and justice. That's where I came from. So I took Dakota Sioux as my language in college. And, came over here to Hawaii thinking that the sovereignty movement and getting autonomy and looking at the relationship between colonization and all that and how it played out here. Mm-hmm. And it has always been my interest.
So you could, being with your background, archaeology and anthropology?
Anthropology, correct.
So you should be able to find all of the skeletons in City Hall there, huh?
You know what? It really disturbs me. I had a rift with my own anthropology department at the University of Minnesota. At the time, they had Little Crow in a box, his bones in a box in the basement at the university. And I said, there's a calling for decades to get his bones out and taken care of. And so when I come here and I think of the rail and I think of the EV and I think of all the laws that the federal government has passed, it seems right here we're on the cusp of, either following suit and doing what's just and advancing the goodwill of all those that have fought hard to have such these laws passed. And then here we have this rail project, and everybody's testing the system, and it's just unfortunate.
Mm-hmm. Now, if you could give a ranking to the issues, what would be the top priority that you're concerned with as a council member?
It's always been lack of infrastructure, and it's always been there has been the calling out of, let's build the roads first, let's make sure we got enough drinking water, let's make sure the wastewater treatment plants are all taken care of, and time and time again before the State Land Use Commission, which has no consistency, no guidebook, plays it by ear, off the cuff. We get the end result of such decisions, and with that lack of consistency and conformity to any kind of guideline, we wind up always getting getting not what we want. And so all the development comes in, not being me personally against development, but it's coming in backwards. We're again, time and time again, of witness how the infrastructure comes in last. And that's the number one critical fight that I've been trying to help champion with others to get the message across.
We got a phone call here. Are you open to calls right now?
Or? I'll take them.
Okay. Good morning and welcome to the Carol Cox Show. Any comment or question for Councilmember Berg?
Yes, this is Alice Greenwood.
Good morning.
My question is, he said he had made an amendment for the purple spot.
Yes.
What was his justification for taking out the purple spot?
Well, I hope we can carry on this conversation beyond just the answering of that specific question.
But if you could, give a little introduction on the purple spot.
This is an industrial site in the Lu'ulu'ale Naval in the valley in the back, and on the Waianae Coast. And it has to do with a petition by a petitioner to reclassify from ag to industrial and in what's called the Waianae Sustainable Communities Plan, which is before the city council. This purple spot is to allow for, recommend, coddle, enable the reclassification from ag to industrial, preservation to industrial, and the State Land Use Commission had rejected such a petition on the grounds of lack of infrastructure, and it just didn't seem conducive. And the push on the other side to allow for the reclassification for those seeking jobs, looking to stay, live, work, and play in their own backyard and get off the roads and looking for a way to find other endeavors to put food on the table, the city council is hearing this on February 9th in committee, Planning and Zoning Committee, and then I believe it would be scheduled on February 15th for third and final reading. And I had, as the councilman person who represents District 1, had removed that from the Sustainable Communities Plan, meaning I'm not in favor at this time of the reclassification of inclusion into the plan, this so-called industrial site. Rather, keep it ag, keep it in agricultural productivity, and that's the justification I had that I actually used in my jargon, though, of a worksheet I turned in, was that I was calling out, I wanted to use this little time capsule I have at City Hall, that while I'm in office, I need to call out the Land Use Commission for its inconsistencies and for its inability to really take heed to all the different aspects that we as the public, when we testify, sometimes they take it and adopt it, and sometimes they don't. And there's no basis. There's no, again, consistency on the Land Use Commissioner's part, which they're not elected officials. They don't have to be and adhere to the people. And so I wanted to call that out and make that an issue and say this is a party to why the purple spot's being asked to be removed is because you folks at the Land Use Commission have put an onus and conditions and requisites and mandates on one petitioner to reclassify. But yet, if I can just say very briefly, Ho'opili D.R. Horton here on the Eva Plain, there's been no discussion of even finishing the East-West Connector Road, which would be the responsibility of the petitioner, in their 1,500-acre development scheme. No mandates outside of the boundary, mandates within the boundary. Mm-hmm. And here we have something else down the Waianae Coast called the Purple Spot, and here the Land Use Commission says, you need to fix all this stuff outside the boundary. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to call them out for lack of consistency, lack of guidance, no rule book. It seems to me like there's no playbook, and that's what's not fair in my mind.
Now, when you say calling them out, you're speaking, I'm assuming, about the people that wanted to do it was the people from the neighborhood board there in Nanakuli and city officials, correct, wanted the purple spot to convert it to a park, a regional park?
Well, that's a party to the Sustainable Communities Plan. That's down the road. Mm-hmm. That's a PIM, a public infrastructure a map that has to do with the relationship between PVT of a landfill and the 50-acre regional park proposal. And that's in litigation. That's another issue. That's not the purple spot.
Okay. And Alice, did that answer your question, or?
Not really, because what's happening is he's saying it's the LUC that's to blame because they want to put in this, in, you know, they, the light industrial park is conformed to make sure, and this is what he's saying, that the LUC has to ensure that the improvement of the road, the improvement of the property, is should it lie upon the company when it's in an area that there is, the roads need to be improved, need to have sidewalks, need to, if you're buying a 2-acre lot at $1 million, you have to put in your own infrastructure. Mm-hmm. You have to put in your own sidewalks. You got to put in your own lights and all that. That's not the LUC problem. Mm-hmm. Outside that property is part of the city and county, and that's his responsibility. You're talking about jobs?
Mm-hmm. So this is the tropic land.
Does it really work?
This is a tropic land facility.
Yes, this is a tropic land facility. People have bought into it. Now they're stuck because there's no city access road to the property. Mm-hmm. It's a naval road that they have to use.
Okay.
And the only other road to the property is Hakimo Road, which is a farm road, a farming road for agriculture. So it doesn't have all the specifications for these large trucks.
Okay.
If I can interject very quickly, I agree with Alice. This is my point, is that if it were to be, let's say, included in the Waianae Sustainable Communities Plan or the LUC, agree with the petitioner's request, I would see it just not happening for decades. And how it usually plays out, the Land Use Commission says, well, you know, not until the last home is built or sold, then your improvements have to be in concurrence. And so it takes forever. And I'm saying in my justification on this is that had it been that the Land Use Commission was not what I call called out on this, I'm trying to say it's the city and county's responsibility when she talks about sidewalks and improvements. If we say, oh, let's have the developer do it, it winds up not happening or happening at the very last moment, and that's, in my opinion, we shouldn't have to wait. I want to see the city and county of Honolulu, in my opinion, when the Navy does leave and vacate this area, which they've stated they will, could be 10 years or so of a timetable, that roadway either going to the state, most likely to the city, is I would rather have the city not say, well, you know, this developer over here, they'll fix the road, they'll keep the dust down, they'll put in the landscaping, they'll put in the sidewalks. And I've witnessed this. I live in Eva by Gentry. I see what Haseko, I see what Gentry does and doesn't do. I see what D.R. Horton with the Land Use Commission, what they may or may not do. And I'm saying, make government accountable. Make the city and county accountable. The money needs to come to our side. They need to fix this roads and stop pointing fingers and pretending the developer is going to do it. We need what's called the East-West Connector Road that connects the Croc Center, the UH West Oahu campus. The DHHL folks of that housing are at a dead end. That East-West Connector Road from Kualakai Parkway on the west side to connect to the Fort Weaver Road Corridor on the east side, and the Land Use Commission hasn't even mentioned it in any of their deliberations since 2007. The Eva Neighborhood Board says you are not to approve D.R. Horton's reclassification until the East-West Connector Road is completed and open for public travel first. First and foremost, since 2007,
okay.
And still to this day, nothing. So I'm worried that government and the city and county will always pretend under a pretext and say, well, the developer will be responsible, and they'll get it done. And I'm saying, you know what? I'd rather have the city and county take eminent domain, condemnation of that road, fix the road now, and then bill the developer. Make the developer come around and pay for it, so every time that they're selling something or developing something of an endeavor, they can pay either float bonds, what have you. But I'm trying to work with Alice in the community from my own experience. You know, I need like an hour and a half to explain it, so maybe they'll see where I'm trying to come from. I'm witnessing the infrastructure coming in last. So my justification with the purple spot was to make sure the infrastructure gets built first, and I don't like this dichotomy between what happens in Hawaii Kai and Kailua versus what's happening out in Waianae. We need our fair share. So I'm calling them out to say, stop, you know, stop pointing fingers or not taking care of what you need to do. The city and county, like Alice says, we need our sidewalks, we need crosswalks painted, we need roads widened, we need to keep the dust down on some of these roads with some landscaping. We have unimproved shoulders, okay. And it's not happening.
Well, let me get another call. Alice, thank you for calling.
All righty. All right,
aloha. Good morning, Carly. Have a comment or question for Mr.
Yeah. It seems to me, Tom, that you're talking apples and oranges. You're not specifying, you know, you're not looking very carefully at what is unique about the Tropicland parcel and its surrounding roads, and what's the reality around the one that you're concerned about, Ho'opili. Because, you know, there is a big difference. That road is a private road, and should it be the authority of the city and the state to assume the cost for the infrastructure that will support the economic needs or feasibility for one particular project? Is that the role of our taxes, to advantage one landowner over the will or the needs or the interests of the public? I'm beginning to understand that maybe your viewpoint is that it's the responsibility of the state people and the county people to carry all the costs for infrastructure development, and then have the developers come in and develop, and the taxpayers carry that, which might be okay. But like what we're facing right now with the 99% and 1% thing, all that financial gain doesn't trickle down back to the community. Mm-hmm. In fact, it stays in the pocket of the people who are the developers, or in the case of Wall Street, those who do the investment. So I'm quite puzzled as to, you know, whether you're really what you're setting up for us as taxpayers and the burden that we're going to be carrying. Could you?
Great point. You know, we have what's called North Road down here in Eva Beach, and it's a golf course responsibility, albeit it's open to the public, and it takes you from Eva Beach all the way into the Iroquois Point, Pu'uloa, on the waterfront, the housing. And that road goes by through the golf course. The memorandum of agreement between the golf course and the city is that because it's an unimproved thoroughfare with a dirt easement shoulder setback, is that the golf course is responsible for maintaining the road. The golf course is not in the road building maintaining business, and so the Navy keeps filling the potholes for the golf course. And we've seen this golf course change hands, maybe two or three times in the last 10 years, because they can't make it, and they're trying to create jobs and help out our economy. And here we have government saying, well, you need to be in the road building business, and for you to have a golf course here, you need to maintain and fix this road. And the golf course says, I just don't have the funds and capability to fix a road and pave a road every couple years. So what I'm getting at is that should be turned over to the city. Many people in our community want to keep this golf course as an economic engine thriving, and we're asking the city to just take over a jurisdiction. Same with Makaha. In that area, their main drag coming in and out, folks have said, you know, it's private. Why doesn't the city just take it over? Same with Villages of Kapolei. That hasn't been turned over to the city. Why doesn't the city take over jurisdiction of these roads? We have Haseko Ocean Point development. Why hasn't the city taken jurisdiction over some of these roads that are still in the private developer's domain? And we're looking at, absolutely correct, if the taxpayer has to take these things over, what I'm looking at is the ability of a quality of life to get your traffic signals in, your safety mitigation measures in, all those things that are called warrants in, rather than waiting for decades and decades with the developer's responsibility. See, if the State Land Use Commission would make it a requisite and say, as soon as the petitioner's petition is approved, all the infrastructure has to be done first, then my argument would be moot. I would agree with the caller and say such, but because of the conditions being that they are, is that, again, not till the last house is built and sold, the so-called improvements need to be carried out. Mm-hmm. That's the problem. Well, and so I'm trying to, I'm doing this as a kind of like a symbolic gesture to just, again, call out the fact that we have a broken system.
Now, do we need symbolic or symbolism, or do we need actual action? For example, in naming those, Colina, for example, when you go inside there, the road mm-hmm. itself is, again, there's a benefit to the developer, because if they do not turn it over to the city, and there are other issues, schools that are promised, boat ramps that are promised, and all of those things that never go completed. But the bigger issue is that if you turn it over to the city, then you, the developer, needs to go and get permits from the city, because it becomes city property, right? So these are the things that they're circumventing the rules and the laws, and this is why the public get cheated. But back to this purple spot.
Yeah.
If the city agrees, and the city is the ones that are actually promoting this, a great many of the people, the Hanneman administration and others, a lot of his people that donated to him, want this. They're proposing it. So if the city agrees to put the infrastructure in, does that still mean we lose the ag land? I thought the intent was just no industrial park, period.
Well, that, you know, you're correct. I'm asking for the urban growth boundary be moved to preserve such. Anyhow, I believe an industrial site of the proponents that were for the tropical land and for the such endeavor is we could probably find, in my opinion, land more conducive for such. Yeah, you know, when you bring up Ko'olina and how some of these issues work, I've proposed this, you know, about 10 years ago. In the state constitution, it is not permitted to do special purpose revenue bonds for real estate development. I would rather, in my opinion, see that any time that a petitioner is asking to rezone, reclassify, if upon the Land Use Commission approving it, make those conditions take place with a time frame, not at the end of the project being completed, but at the beginning of the project. And my plan was, if you allow special purpose revenue bonds to go to development of such projects, and you amend the state statutes, then the developer, when they're now building homes and selling homes, they're paying off the bonds. It's almost like an impact fee, mm-hmm. but not having it be an impact fee. It becomes on the front end. See, an impact fee collects money off of each home sold, and then the money's going to a kitty to build the roads later, after the fact. My swap on this is to say, I don't like to see the roads come in last. I'm like most folks in saying, why did Fort Weaver Road get widened after the fact and put us through all this turmoil, you know, for over a decade? Right. How do you get it done ahead of time? Well, the developer says, I don't have the money to widen the road. I don't have the money to make these improvements. And I'm saying, well, then let's make it a condition. So to the last two callers, of their concern is, and I agree, you know, we don't want to have the developer get away with, quote, not doing their fair share or not making these improvements. Mm-hmm. There's no consistency, no rule book, no playbook that you and I and the public can feel in confidence that there's going to be some kind of a requisite and a mandate to get the infrastructure each and every time someone asks for something, whether it's the purple spot, tropical land, Ko'olina, with the harbor, with their boat ramp, the adequate parking. You know, we have to be in the public so astute and follow these websites and find out when the hearing is. And what Alice called earlier about is, gee, you know, we the public crafted this Waianae Sustainable Communities Plan, and out of the blue, mm-hmm. without anybody's knowledge, the Department of Planning and Permitting interjects something that didn't come out of resolve between the community's deliberations. Right. The Planning Commission gets it, and they punt. They punt to the mayor, the mayor's administration, they punt, and the people are pretty much frustrated, not just mm-hmm. with me, but they're frustrated at the process. So I wanted mm-hmm. to say, look, everyone agrees, not everyone, but predominantly from the thrust of communications from the community is keep ag and ag. Let's help sustain our ability to be self-sufficient mm-hmm. in our foodstuffs. And how do we do that? So everybody else that's talking about, you know, preserving ag land and the quality of land and all that stuff. I don't need to regurgitate that.
Right.
I don't need to put in a worksheet and talk about that. I want to get folks talking like on this radio program. How do we get the Land Use Commission, the taxpayer, the developer, the petitioner, everybody on the same page to say, there's got to be a playbook. If you're going to come into our community and get something and request something, then on the front end, let us know, do you have enough water to sustain yourself?
Let me ask you, there's a couple of things I definitely want to talk about. One is the landfill, and two mm-hmm. is there was a proposal that you had floated to build a train, a dinner train, around Cayena Point.
And, you can call it a breakfast, lunch, and dinner. You bet.
Oh, okay, and I was just, no, I don't want a job as a porter, but... But I want to talk about that. Well, there was a caller that can't call in, and they, if you'd like to call back. Again, this is the Carol Cox Show. My guest is City Council Member Tom Berg. And here we another call, Tom. Good morning. Come in a question for Councilmember Berg.
Yeah, that he just finished talking about, you know, infrastructure should go in first, or at least, you know, prior to the development coming up. So I don't see... you know, Tom, your logic actually works when we're talking about the train around Cayena Point, because I don't know what the infrastructure, there's nothing out there, and yet you want to put a train out there. And then where did that idea come from? Because if you talk to the people out in Waianae, and you look at their sustainable community plan, you will see very clearly that the will of the people is to keep that end of the island in wilderness. So again, it's like the purple spot. Here you have people who come in and declare what it is that will be good for the Waianae community, and then go about trying to insert it or hijack it into the sustainable plan. So Tom, I think you're talking two sides of your mouth.
Yeah, I'm ready for that. Good question. And here how I can clarify. I have no resolution. I have no bill.
Uh-huh.
I've put nothing on the table. I haven't used city resources to advocate. What took place was when I got in, I wanted to make sure there was an emergency route that was workable. People had the keys to the gates. They can get in and out of Dodge. I wanted to make sure the secondary access road was funded. I've proposed three proposals at City Hall to provide funding for a secondary access road. When I took a tour with the Navy and the Army for Coley Coley Pass, I saw that there's not going to be funding to do that. And I said, how do we get out of Dodge in times of catastrophic, whether man-made or by nature? How do we resolve this one way in, one way out? A private developer who I've known for over 10 years on the mainland wanted to do a dinner train from Waipahu Depot Road all the way to Haleiwa, and it was a north shore to south shore complex. And at the time, he tried with Cayetano's administration, Lingle's administration, and they said, well, we don't have a railroad quote authority in the PUC. We don't have anything to help you or guide you. So for 10 years, this guy would come here, and they play with trains, and he says, look, he got a hold of me and said, I will build on the current right-of-way of where the railroad used to go around Cayena Point. I won't encroach. I won't disrupt any historical or cultural features. I won't endanger any flora or fauna. Everyone stays on the train. You can't get to the train unless you take a bus, so there'll be no added traffic on the roadway, and it will help jobs. It'll help the organic farmers. They'll be selling their produce on the train. There'll be folks explaining on the train with a microphone in their hand about the cultural sensitivity and educating people about how beautiful the area is. The train goes at the pace of somebody walking. So pretty much you'd have the endangered, quote, seals and the albatross probably waving a fin or a wing at the train someday saying, throw me some food, you know. But I'm trying to get at the point that this developer says, you know what, I will build a way in and out for times of emergencies that you have a back door. And I'll do it without the taxpayer paying a penny. If you'll give me and allow me to use this right-of-way, that road will only be opened in times of emergencies. In other words, the road's not open 24/7. It's never going to be open. But in case the tsunami siren sounds off, or in case there's a utility poles that trap people, or in case there's a shootout and people can't get to and from work and get home and they're trapped, and that
uh-huh.
is truly an emergency, this guy says, I'll come in and give you a back door, a way in and out, without costing the taxpayer a penny.
Mm-hmm.
And if you allow me to do an economic engine of a so-called the most scenic train ride in the world. It'll be an eighth wonder of the world. It'll be on everybody's mind to come to Hawaii to not just look at lava, but get this postcard and say, I rode the dinner train. Mm-hmm. This is what the guy proposed. And I says, you know what? It's my duty and obligation to throw this out there. I'll throw it out there. So I gave all this idea to the Waianae Neighborhood Board. They put it on their agenda, and they said, no, we don't want it. Mm-hmm. What did Tom Berg do? I'm not pushing it. I'm not ramming this through. I'm not doing something under the table. I just wanted to explore and exhaust everything in my power while in office mm-hmm. to fight for the study. We got $1 million that was going to be deleted from the Oahu Metropolitan Planning Organization to study the feasibility of a secondary access road. And they've been studying this since 1967. So I've just seen government not do its part, not fund us. There's four ways in and out in Kailua. Four ways in and out. We got one. And these folks on the Waianae Coast have been paying their taxes. Why don't they have any options? So the study was important that we fought for. That vote took place in December of 2011. Mm-hmm. We championed that. But then, regarding this dinner train again, I was looking at how do we help jobs on the west side? How do we help the farmers? They sell their produce. People can get the cuisine, get the local the culture, help educate. You know, you have the scenic highways push mm-hmm. down the Waianae Coast, and it would be a good marriage. So if folks are against the scenic highway push, that's going to actually add traffic. That's going to add cars to the thoroughfare. My proposal that this developer wanted on the mainland was, you can't get there by car. No mm-hmm. ticket will be allowed on the train by car. You mm-hmm. must come by bus so that they sell these junkets from Ko'olina or Turtle Bay or Waikiki Hotel. That way you'd cut down on the traffic so there's mm-hmm. no inundation on the people of the Waianae Coast. And then that's how you get a secondary access road built for free without any taxpayer dollars involved. And that was a solution I wanted to float out there, and I'm glad that I had a chance to respond to the caller on that.
Got another caller. Caller, you come in a question?
Yeah, maybe the better way to help our farmers is to put in the infrastructure that will help them get more productivity out of their land. So what are you doing to take a look at the water system and the water rates for our farmers?
Yeah, that's an excellent point. I helped pass and shepherd along with Councilwoman Kobayashi to bring into the mayor's cabinet a brand new position, and it's an agricultural liaison, and that liaison is Laura Thielen. And the first report just came out last month, some 10-15-page report, and it's just the beginning. Laura Thielen's going to go to neighborhood board throughout the island and answer those very questions. So when we have an agricultural task force and we have all these independent in their own microcosm, in their own, you know, on their own, this is a way to bring a one-stop shop, make it a big collage, everybody get to see it on the same page, and now through Laura Thielen in her position in the mayor's administration of that cabinet, we will have accountability, we have someone to go to, we have someone to give our concerns. These are, you know, sunshine law, agenda items we can interject. So to answer that, she's absolutely right, this caller. You know, what's being done to assist the farmer? How are they going to make sure that they can have the water there to sustain and the endeavor of what they wanted to get into for a business? And these are the questions that have to be quantified. So I believe that with this new position that Laura Thielen's been in for the last couple months is the beginning, and we'll be able to get those answers. I myself, I'm a little bit disturbed on the desalination of our water here on the west side, which hasn't come about us yet, but why would we out here in West Oahu have to drink desalinated water? Is that something that we really want? Is that what, when people moved out here, they'd think that they'd have to succumb to? And that, again, that $20 million desalination plant hasn't come through, and that's been delayed.
Right, but so, if you're bringing in all of the development and the housing, mm-hmm. you only have a limited amount of water anyway. So that's why they're probably drinking or will be drinking desalinated water, because the city council is giving everything to their friends. But speaking
of
one question I have, and it for many months now, it simply doesn't set well, but I'd like to ask you, Laura Thielen.
Mm-hmm.
You supported that.
I supported the liaison position.
Right.
I didn't pick her. I'm not the one that gets to pick her.
I know, but if you're supporting it now, Who did she compete with, and why Laura Thielen? She was ahead of DLNR. Why didn't she do something as chairman in DLNR? She has state lands that could have been that is used for agriculture. I didn't see any liaison activity. What is this nonsense? I mean, and how did she get picked? And aren't you? Are you not concerned? I mean, this. When you, I didn't know you were in support of that because this is not consistent with the mantra that Tom Berg, public
let me explain.
Persona.
I can help you. That's what I did. When we were in committee and I was arguing for this, first of all, I said it doesn't need to be a paid position. We have farmers out there with so much expertise that could mentor the new ones out there. There are people out there that would do this for the love of it, like your football, your softball, your baseball coach, mm-hmm. all the folks that get out there that says, you know, I'm retired. And I'll go and give it my all. And I sat in committee and argued and said, I don't believe this needs to be increase the size of government. If you're going to have all the benefits and a paid position, I says, I'm not for it. I think that you should first at least solicit, put out there, get round up the troops that would say, hey, I'll do this for nothing. And I got a lot of expertise here and I want to help you out. And I said, first exhaust that avenue. Well, that didn't pan out. I didn't get my way.
Mm-hmm.
The argument was, well, if they don't pay somebody, they're not going to show up. And so with that said, there was no mechanism in there to say who and what. Well, just like HART, Honolulu Authority for Rapid Transportation, you know,
right.
That thing was done, you know, talk about shenanigans. I couldn't manipulate the resolution as a non-voting member on the budget committee, which I'm a non-voting member. It was... all my efforts were done to make sure that the taxpayer wouldn't have to pay for this position because, just what you mentioned, I couldn't guarantee to the public at large who would be in that position. It was under the onus and direction and the sole capability of the mayor
mm-hmm.
to pick.
Right.
And that's how that came about. So if you think someone else could do a better job than Laura Thielen, then speak out and say something.
No, I think we didn't need it. It's not a question personally mm-hmm. if there's somebody can do a better job. I just think that we shouldn't be giving monies and jobs to special friends and people, and that's what this is.
Well, I spoke up.
I know. I'm just responding to my part of it.
Yeah.
She doesn't show me anything about agriculture, and hopefully the voters will keep that in mind, and maybe they'll give Carlisle a job on doing something else. But got another caller. Hold on. Good morning, caller. Comment or question for Mr. Berg?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Carol, this is Tina Quizon. I had a question for Tom. You recently did some executive production with Olelo on the rail, is that correct?
Yes, ma'am.
What was that produced for? What entity was that produced for?
I've had pretty much a town hall meeting every month. Sometimes maybe I squeeze in two if I can, since I've been in office. And I've gone up and down the coast bringing City Hall to the district. And I represent, whereby I had a survey on my website, 75% said, we'd rather fix the sewers and the roads first, don't build this rail. And so I really have a good following of a core out there that says, do what you can to stop the fleecing and the bleeding of our tax dollars for this steel wheel rail project. Help
us
out.
Okay, so who was that production produced for?
I'm getting your question. So what happened was is, I have a series on Olelo called Forever Today. I've had it on for over 10 years. And I have, just like any other producer with Olelo, public access television.
Yeah, is that Forever Today? Is that through a nonprofit or that's your individual work?
That's just me. I'm doing everything I can to help educate and get messages out there. So what happened was is this, the Olelo folks volunteered to film the event, and they filmed the event, and 99% of the time I'm filming my own town hall meetings, and I put them on television. I put them on my website. I make YouTubes of them. And so in this instance, this meeting was a very balanced meeting where it was to be a debate between pro and con rail. And everyone who was pro rail mm-hmm. of the steel wheel, I gave them a 4-month notice. I had 3 to 4 phone calls, maybe 5 letters, emails over the 4 or 5 months begging and pleading for every elected official who supports the GET tax and supports the rail endeavor to come and partake with the Q&A. They all declined. From the mayor to HART to DTS to every elected official who is pro-rail, no one, not one, would come to the meeting. and they didn't come. So the only folks that showed up were those that, again, you know, numbers don't lie, people do.
Okay. Well, thank you, Tina.
Okay, so that was through the Forever Today show, or what? You didn't answer what it was produced through.
I believe I'm the executive producer. I could have either been the producer or executive producer. I can't remember, but either way, however that drops, I'm the one that asked Alelo to film it, and these are the air dates that you got that I have announced. And
I haven't seen any of that. So it'll air on as what show?
Well, we'll take that up later, Tina. We got another call.
It's a special.
Okay.
It's a special TV show.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, bye-bye.
Good morning, caller. You have a comment, a question for Mr. Berg?
Yeah, it's really hard getting through. You must have your light boards lighting up. So my question goes back to an earlier thing. Tom, can you be more specific who the Indian groups you work with? I mean, I want something specific. Thanks.
Well, just growing up in Minneapolis, the Dakota Sioux, there are seven dialects, so they're really... when people just think of the Sioux Indians, there are really seven different dialects of that language throughout the plains of North, South Dakota, into Canada, in Wisconsin, and Iowa. And in those areas, when I was going to college at the University of Minnesota, I took Dakota Sioux. When I went to the University of South Dakota as an archaeology major, anthropology, I went on an archaeological dig on the St. James River, and I saw how they were... the class was digging up human remains, roughly 10,000 year old remains, the Mandan Indian tribe, and it disturbed me that for the sake of science, these bones had to, and they sit in a box in the basement somewhere, and I just felt that it just rubbed me wrong. It didn't feel good internally, and so I that's my relationship. It's just my instruction in school, interest in American Indian movement, and for self-determination. No matter what the tribe or people would be, I've worked on the Blackfeet, lived on the Blackfeet Indian Reservation, where I would spend my summers in Wisconsin was on the Mole Lake Chippewa area reservation. So I've had a very good rapport and relationship with Native American peoples when I lived in South Dakota and Montana and Wisconsin and Minnesota, and just feel that I could maybe add something to the table here in Hawaii and help out. You know, Leonard Peltier is still sitting in Leavenworth in Kansas in prison, and that's another issue that I think is an injustice.
Mm-hmm. So if you could quickly... talk about the landfill, and there's some benefit packages, and are you aware of the SEP grants? But if you could, if you run out of time, I'm going to have a second hour, and you're more than welcome to call back, because, you know, we do throw stones at you on occasion and have.
Sure.
And so I want to be fair and say to you, you know, hear as much time as you want in the next hour, you know, let the people hear some of your ideas without portraying you, you know, how we like to beat up on people.
Hey, I'll talk about APEC if have to, too. Yeah, not a problem. Hey, you mentioned the landfill. Do we have time to...
Could
be specific, please. Are you talking about the 15-year...
Well, is it going to be renewed? What's your vision, or what's your insight on this Blue Ribbon panel, whatever that
is? I'll tell you that Blue Ribbon panel, we have one representative, Tesha Malama, on there to represent us on the leeward side. She didn't show up at the meeting last week.
What?
We had no representation. So I was there, I had my staff there, I came in on the tail end, and apparently they're going to be regurgitating all this stuff of their findings again in March. Now, if you go to the website, they've canceled meeting after meeting after meeting. You know, we were supposed to find out where the next site would be back in April, in October.
Mm-hmm.
And then in November they canceled the meeting, and then they were going to meet in January after the new year, and that didn't happen, and so they finally came together. And if you look at that opala.org website, you know, as someone who's a government official representing Council District 1 of the Waianae Coast, that is the only private PVT construction demolition waste landfill and the only municipal landfill at Waimanalo Gulch Sanitary Landfill, you think that the mayor's administration would give me an email, send something to me of when this Blue Ribbon panel, because I objected to this Blue Ribbon panel, and I said this thing is really slanted, and we want more representation. Mm-hmm. I had lobbied from day one and says we need at least three people from this Waianae Coast on this panel. And so that didn't pan out. So I've been very vocal. It's a broken treaty. Everything about the Waimanalo Gulch landfill, and as you know, the city has abrogated its duties, in my opinion. They haven't done their due diligence to make the landfill obsolete. Mm-hmm. And I'd love to call back in the second hour and tell you my plans on how I believe we can advance for the greater good, that one community need not be pitted against another community, and rather there are should be solutions advanced rather than falling backwards in this, you know, this old technology that we've been deploying.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The SB 2302, you recall that one, the payback fee for landfills, you supported that bill?
Oh gosh, yeah, I was there, I testified, you bet, it was the other day at City Hall, made mm-hmm. a YouTube on it.
Yeah, and so give a little bit of background on that, and why do we need that when we have the SEP grants?
I don't like the grant. I didn't like the way that grant handled. Yes. I didn't like it going to community services. That's why I got it out of there. Monies are going to lapse. Went through parks. That was just a temporary means to get the $1.5 million on the so-called that process for a benefit package, mm-hmm. having to have the landfill. That needs to be tweaked. It should be made permanent. I've made a resolution for that. The community shouldn't have to fight year after year, administration after administration. And I had a resolution to say, make it permanent. Let's have it go through budget fiscal services so that we don't have nonprofits, this and that, and money's lapsing, but rather concrete with the neighborhood boards, as I had done with the setup with Gary Cabato, Director of Parks, is you pick and choose what your improvements are. These are to be above and beyond your capital improvement projects. We don't want to be duplicating and getting ripped off, so to speak, mm-hmm. but rather augment with new features, things that aren't being planned, are not in the kitty, are coming down the pike. And so this Senate Bill 2302 goes above and beyond the city and county. It really should be in DBED, Department of Business, Economic Development, and Tourism, should be within the Department of Health, that there be a contingency fee, not just for when there's a violation, but rather, as most states do, they would do such through statute on the state level to provide for remedy for the community that has to host these so-called blights. And that way, with the Department of Economic Business, Economic Development, and Tourism, they really have the ability and the staff to do the grant writing and get all these monies that are federally available for us. Because when you break it down to the city and county level, what did we find out? The onus was put on these reports. It was a scathing audit on some of these nonprofits. Didn't fill in the reports. Where did the money go? When are the monies going to be released? Mm-hmm. Why aren't these things going back directly to the community? They're not tangible. We can't touch them. We have no idea where our money, how the money was spent. We can see the product. So I said enough is enough. So Senator Miley Shimabukuro says, let's have this state. Let's put something in state statute.
So let me stop you. If you'd like to give a call back at the next hour, about 9:05, and we'll take it up from there. And I really appreciate you giving some insight. And anything else you want to talk about, feel free. We'll talk for about 30 minutes. And those of you listening, the Carol Cox Show, Tom Berg is my guest. And 524-1080, Waianae, or any of you if you have questions for Mr. Berg. We'll be back shortly, okay, Mr. Berg?
Thank you.
Aloha.
Once in every life, someone comes along, and you came to me. It was almost like a song. It was almost like a song. January through December, it was such a perfect year.
Then stay tuned for the second half of the Carol Cox Show right after the news on K Radio.
Okay, welcome back to the Carol Cox Show, the second half. My guest is Mr. Tom Berg, City Councilman of Honolulu, Ewa Beach area, and Waianae. Good morning again, Councilman Berg.
Aloha.
All righty. Well, we talked about that and then some. One of the things, Haseko, is that in your district?
Yes, it is.
And we've talked about it on air, but about this... the marina. What's your take on that, and how are you doing anything to address the promises that was presented in order to get the developer to get permission to develop that? And now I guess we'll describe it as a reneging. What's the deal?
You know, from a marina to lagoon, it's really a pond. It's really standing water. It's a pond. A lagoon has an ebb and a tide back out to the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
This concept should be called a pond.
Mm-hmm.
A lagoon is like a coatline. It's a sexy word for a Gilligan's Island to make everyone think it's paradise and it's pretty. It's a pond. Mm-hmm. And when you think of pond, you think of standing water without a flow.
And so
there's going to be this pump in there. I guess what I should say is I was very disappointed to see in today's newspaper that Department of Planning and Permitting Director Tanoe had said it's really out of the city's jurisdiction, domain, and scope,
right,
and is punting, and you know, I just again, this is why the callers earlier should I hope understand where I'm coming from. It's in my craw that the State Land Use Commission and these approvals of this process, there's no compliance or non-compliance mechanism. There's nothing of a timetable that says when these things are to transpire. The more you delay, hey, they forget about it. Nah, no one's going to care anymore. They bought their home 10 years ago. And you know, if it's fresh on everybody's mind, as if the ink hasn't dried yet on this document, then there'd be recourse. Because the ink is crusted up and no one can find the documents and you got to regurgitate them in someone's filing cabinet, the half the battle is to find out what was said, what the agreement was. And so that's really half the fight here for folks, is to have to find out in good faith what the parties brought to the table for the Land Use Commission to say you can have X, Y, Z. Mm-hmm. And so this has been my point on the Purple Spot. This has been my point on Ho'opili, is that there's a playbook there that each time that these guys huddle up, you and I, as we're the coach, we're the guys that own the team. We're the folks that are supposed to call the plays and send them in on the field and say execute. But what happens is they get to make up their own plays without our knowledge. They don't have requisites of a guidebook, of a playbook, of anything that you and I and the public know that can rely on is going to be consistent and in good faith execute that of which has been brokered. So, again, we're going back to the Land Use Commission said this and the petitions were saying that. And if they're not going to follow suit, is there harm? Is there some type of damages? Could there be a class action lawsuit? It's private property, and I look at this to be somewhat disingenuous. You know, Carol, when you talk about and look at this regarding the hotels, it's not feasible to go to with the hotel development, says the developer. Well, just down the road for DeBartolo's development, they're building two hotels. So you got a stone's throw up the road, advocating we need hotels. But yet, a quarter of a mile down the road, well, there's no use for a hotel. Mm-hmm. It's and DeBartolo is going right now through their process to get those approvals. And I have a good 20-page testimonial on that in the comment period on that whole development, which will bring a Ala Moana-sized shopping center right here on the east side of Kapolei, where Roosevelt and Kapolei Parkway intersect. Mm-hmm. So, these things usually go, these things should be, in my opinion, on the front page of the newspaper. Here's the proposed changes coming down your neck of the woods. Mm-hmm. Instead, you gotta, as the consumer, work so hard to navigate through the system to find out when these things are taking place. So when you read about Tim Tucker, who said he was involved in this newspaper article regarding his fight before the Eva Neighborhood Board regarding a breach of contract, It's called a bait and switch, Carol. Okay.
Well, now this issue about the Tanoi, we know that is not true, where he claims he has no control, because even though it's in the Land Use Commission's purview, there are certain things. Is it in an SMA? Is it a special use permit?
Right.
All of those things. So, so my next question is, why don't you, as a city councilman, contact the FBI and ask to file a criminal complaint on these dudes, because you can't continue to repeat the same thing. We go out to Turtle Bay. It's the same thing. You got the same guy sitting there in the steersman's seat directing and lying to the public and withholding and having private meetings. That's white collar. Well, this isn't white collar. This is green collar crime. This is money. And why don't you? Is there anything that prevent you from championing the people's cause and stand up and file a criminal complaint against these yahoos? I believe it's warranted, because there's just too much of this corruption. And we then go to the Land Use Commission. By the way, everything is in writing that they have to do and they should have done in the bait and switch. And if Tanoi insists on that there's nothing to do, then maybe the FBI or some other law enforcement entity should be easy to pick and choose who they prosecute.
Well, Carol, I'd like to interject this. I have said from the very beginning on this that the homeowners, being a private issue, that in their purchase agreements, in their bylaws, covenants, governing documents, any such reference to a marina is that they could together with their individual homeowner associations, whether it's the townhome or a condo, and then the master plan community of the overall community association, is that if they were to put it on as a special election or a special meeting and have a motion and a decision made, that decision then would trigger that they could then interject with the City and County of Honolulu, with the Land Use Commission, whether it be the Federal Bureau of Investigations. But the thing that I have issue with is having politicians get involved without getting that direction. I have said the onus is on the agreement between the buyer and the developer, and if there is to be a grievance, the buyer needs to first show due diligence. Have they asked for mediation? Have they gone and filed for mediation? Have they filed an arbitration? Has any homeowner association done their due diligence to first trigger that? So I think the first thing a judge would say, or any investigative body would say, is what is the sentiments of the position of those who've entered into this contract?
See, well, let's stop for a minute. Yep. That sounds fine if we were sitting in a courtroom, but the courts didn't issue this permit. It was the Land Use Commission and the city and others that had comment and said, we don't believe, we've reviewed it, and they gave an official and a review of it, and as a condition of allowing them to build. Remember, they built that 90-foot wall or some wall there in Ever Beach, and they had to go back and mitigate. So when they say they don't have authority, I believe that that is not truth, and it's just wrong.
I got
a caller for you.
I'll get that mitigated, Carol. Okay. I'll get back to you.
Okay. Caller, go ahead. You have a comment or question? Hello? Okay, I guess they don't really... no patience, no questions. Go ahead, finish up what you were saying, Tom.
I want to get that resolved. I want to get clarity. I will write a letter to the DPP director, Tanoe, and ask for clarification as to what grounds and basis that there is to be, not in his arena or purview, such decision-making capabilities, whether something was breached, abrogated, not followed up on, whatever the terminology could be. I'll do that, and I'll get back to you. And I want that clarification as well, because I recall when Councilmember DeSoto was in office, he actually put a hold on their permit, exclaiming that the marina of its development concept was going too slow. Because I recall back in 2000, working for a state legislator at the time, everyone was promised, when we were dealing with such a traffic nightmare, that this was going to provide a ferry relief to us using, you know, hydrofoils, or, you know, they did the wiki ferry pilot project back in 2000. We spent $2 million through the governor's administration, and everyone said, bring the ferry back. It was successful here. Why can't we use the ocean as a superhighway? Well, I remember Haseko coming before the Evatt Neighborhood Board. I remember politicians exclaiming and saying the following: we want and need this marina because this is going to be your alternative means of travel. And so to lose the marina, we've just lost out on a ferry service, which OMPO policy and the STIP and the TIP and the ORTP, Oahu Regional Transportation Plan 2030, 2035, you can go back to 2025, they've all said Ocean Point is going to be a terminus for relieving traffic as for ferry service. Right. And now that just gets pulled out from us as an option out here on the Eva Plain. Where's the recourse?
Well, one of the things I must point out is that it would be difficult. Representative Pine seemed to chime in immediately and talked about having swimmers and the triathletes and all of that. So I guess what people should call that now, Walden's Pond, or not Walden's Pond, because it's just a ripoff, and someone all the way from the mayor down. But then they didn't put Tanoi in there just because he's cute and cuddly. They put him in there because he walks their walk and knows how to hide and then proclaim no issue with the public. Coralina, for example, they have complete authority on dictating on the boat ramps that's still sitting there not being used and installed. David Tanoi, those folks are the ones who told him they could bust it up. but also told them that was a condition of their permit and what have you to get the zone chaining. So anyway, I got another caller. Hold on. Good morning, caller. Comment or question?
Good morning, Carol. Good morning, Ms. Berg, Councilman Berg. Yeah, my question is totally different. Well, it deals with the city. Concerned about the car registration going up, and then how we can get these people off the road who are illegally driving cars with no insurance and whatnot.
Oh, you're pushing the right buttons for me. Carol, can I respond?
Yeah, I go ahead.
In my 10, 11 years working at the state capitol, I would witness the insurance, the lobbyists for the insurance council and all those folks come in and fight these measures, whereby we could use simple software data sharing that most other municipalities and states have already deployed. And that is that when somebody says, I'm going to go in and get my safety sticker today, and then as soon as I get that sticker on my vehicle, I'm going to cancel my insurance policy, and I'll take the risk. So for the rest of the year, I'll drive without insurance unless you can catch me. And the only way you can catch me is if I do a moving violation or, you know, something of that nature. Then you pull me over and you find out I don't have insurance. I'll take the risk. You know, I keep my headlights working. I'll keep my taillights and my tires inflated. You ain't going to catch me. Well, with that said, what they've done in other places is that they've put in software that when you cancel from an insurance provider your motor vehicle insurance with a click of a button, that gets attached to your license plate, so there's no intrusion on your privacy and personal private privileged information. It's attached to a license plate, and it says this license plate is no longer insured. That's with the Department of Motor Vehicle Registration, of which in turn that data is shared with the police officer that when they're driving their vehicles around, can just punch in a license plate, and they'll say, this license plate is uninsured. Now, Georgia is one of the last states to do this recently. They went from a 22% uninsured motorist rate on their public thoroughfares down to a 2% overnight. No construction headaches, no tax increases. Now, the rail's only going to bring 1 to 3% of cars off the road if rail were up and running in its full, you know, operational segment, 34 miles from UH to UH. 1 to 3%, you know, UH West Oahu, they said it'll take 10% off the roads going into town, going in the opposite direction. That's a $700 million campus just to build. Right. Well, with just a few thousand dollars in software, we can get 17% off the road, and that will be when folks say, hey, UH isn't in session, school's out, traffic is much better. Well, imagine that 4 to 5 times more of a relief when you get the uninsured motorists off. Now, I helped before I became a council person. I worked for a representative, and I helped write for this representative House Bill 1351, and that's alive. That bill is alive right now. So caller and everyone else out there, if you help advocate, lobby to Representative Joe Suki with the Transportation Department.
He want to photograph us all. Let's not call him for nothing. let's call the
band camps. But just very quickly, to come to a conclusion on this, is that the city and county, the counties, do not have the authority with the state insurance commissioner in statute to allow for the sharing of this data. It has to be placed in statute to give the city and counties the authority to first then now implement this data sharing system to approach and address the uninsured motorist out there. And so I've been advocating for Senator English on the Senate side, Representative Joe Suki on the House side. They have a bill that's a carryover from last year, and they should hear it. And that will give us instantaneous traffic. If any of you of listeners have been hit by an uninsured motorist, you know what I'm talking about.
Right.
Yeah, and one more thing. If this thing is passed and everything, does the city impound the car and hold it, and then the person has to pay once he shows the insurance?
In the program that's been taking place in most of these states that have deployed this, is instead of having to pay for the storage of the vehicle, you just take the license plate. So the owner of the car, you can put it in your driveway, you put it in your own property, you can store it, you can pay for whatever if it's impounded, but they just take the license plates. Yeah. So that way we, the taxpayer, don't have to have all these storage yards and such. So it's just, you just remove the license plates.
So when a police officer does pull them over and tell them that they don't show insurance, they need to get a tow truck and tow that car away?
That would be one option, correct?
Uh-huh. And about the registration, where does the money go? You know, registration fees are going to go up again this year?
I have on my website, I've done some research on this. I've looked at the last 3 years, what's happened to all those fees collected on the register, both city and state. Where does the money go, vehicle weight tax? Where is it going? How much money is being collected? And off the top of my head, I don't have the document with me, but I've been passing it out to all my neighborhood board meetings so that I could answer this intelligently, and now you got me. I'm tongue-tied, but right now, some of these questions haven't been accurately answered as far as the increase. Some folks have had it almost double their vehicle registration tax, and therefore you would think then that roadway construction would be enhanced or the maintenance enhanced, and people aren't seeing the end results. So the last 3 years that they've been raising these fees, we're not being able to quantify on the other end what's taken place. And so I have the study. I've gotten the answers for you. If you want to email me, I'd be happy to forward you that whole research paper on this to find out where everything's going.
Yeah, okay. Limelight companies are really making money over the entire company. Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you. Well, anyway, going back to one subject on the landfill, we got interrupted there. You know, if we rely on violations, this SB 2302, and it's something to the effect that if it's a violation, the community gets something back. Is that the way that the language of that bill?
Senator Shimabukuro put this in as a placeholder, and we all concur that the language is flawed, and it's not what we want.
Mm-hmm.
However, to make the filing deadline, she introduced this where the title could be accurate, and now we can gut and replace and do what we need to do. So when a busload of folks from Waianae Coast came down, and I made a video of this, and you could hear this as of testimony, the committees of a joint committee that took this up had decided that their decision-making, I believe it will be next week on this measure, that they'll be able to adopt the actual language whereby it's not contingent upon, not relied upon, a violation. So you don't have to wait for a violation to occur before the community gets compensated. That's one amendment that would be made.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, because that was one of the glaring concerns I had. That
yep.
Number one, who's going to report the violations?
That's
the public
right.
That has no access to it, even myself who religiously watch this place.
Mm-hmm.
There's a great effort on part of the state and the city, and it's owned by the city, by the way. And so why don't you introduce some legislation to allow a public person to be able to go up there or a committee from over there to be able to go unannounced? I know there are safety concerns. If they're dynamiting, we're fine. But the way it works now, the city conceals violations and the state drags its feet. Case in point, in December of 2010, they knew that it was a catastrophic failure in the sale, but they blamed it on God and whoever as a natural storm, which was a lie. And then nothing came of it other than Gary Gill and others padding and protecting the city and waste management. So these are some of the things I would say to you if you're going to get. And are you looking to keep the landfill there? And if so, why don't you, you're trying to minimize its impact, why don't you encourage them you will take less money if they put less trash in? The more trash they put in, the more money you ask for by tonnage. That would be an incentive to make sure that they're not encouraged to go up there and dump if they insist on keeping it there.
You know, good points. The earlier caller had said, you know, who filmed this and where is it going to be and who produced such? Well, I filmed my town hall meeting on this very subject.
Mm-hmm.
We had Councilwoman Tulsi Gabbard there. We had Gill there. We had DOH there. We had Environmental Services. We had all the people there to discuss that breach when I had my town hall meeting in February. And one of the things, if I can come full circle on this and answer your question, was is they hadn't done any testing of the subterranean of the ocean floor. We had heard fishermen say that when they were pulling up their anchors, never before had they been pulling up muck and gobbledygook. After the breach, their anchors that they're pulling up are filled with muck. And I asked the Department of Health, Environmental Services, did you do any testing of that muck. Have you done any subterranean samples of the ocean floor? And the answer was no. So the only testing that they've done was the currents in the water, you know, up at the surface.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're absolutely right. First of all, we can't get them to test that of what I just mentioned. And how would I be able to mandate that? Great, great observation. I think you're spot on. I concur with you, and I will, as soon as I get in the office Monday, I'll start working on such a either a resolution or a bill and try to shepherd something through for the unannounced investigations. And more importantly, when the data is being collected, do the nearby residents or anybody who wishes to, do they have easy, able to get this access brought to their attention? So,
no, they'll conceal it. And also, the problem is, in an English language, it should be, in layman's term, a specific language. If they found parts exceeding the allowable levels, then it should spell that out and be specific. But instead, they hide behind
science and numbers. You know, when we had I had a town hall meeting the other week on the water sewer bill, and folks said, you know, I've stopped washing my clothes as much. I don't water my lawn. I'm not washing my car anymore. I'm telling, hey, honey, don't flush the toilet. I'm saving by the flush. I'm really conserving water, but my bill goes up. And the reason the bill goes up is that the more we conserve, the less intake on the other end. So if they're not getting the revenue on the other end by us conserving, they charge us more. So you brought up a great point there on tipping fees into the landfill. The incentive is backwards. The city has no desire, in my opinion, or of interest to end the money-making scheme they have on the Wymanoa Gulch Sanitary Landfill. If you remove the $30 to $40 million going into the city's coffers onto tipping fees, how are you going to replace that money? And also, the taxpayer owns and would have the right. There's millions of dollars in that landfill in methane gas that we own.
Mm-hmm.
And is that going back to offset our utility bills? So
no, they're flaring it and burning it off. And
you know, so you know, it's time to rise up and take charge on some of these things. You know, I wanted to talk about my disappointment. I'm included in this. You know, I give myself criticism,
okay.
And I've tried to advance this when I had my town hall meeting on our water sewer bills. What is the obligation of our city and county to look at our water sewer rates? What are we doing to keep them flat, to keep them from increasing? Now, you've all heard this in some 10 years. An average bill of $90 for a family of four is going to go up to $400 just down the road, and that's the rate schedule. I mean, that's already what we know is going to happen. So what are we doing to offset that? So I had this town hall meeting, and I said to folks, look, like Carol, like you said, put it in easy terms. When I'm looking at rates, when I'm looking at what we charge the hotel industry,
mm-hmm.
I'm trying to figure out, are they getting a break? See, when the residential property owner goes to Tahiti for 2 months and doesn't use one drop of water, they still get a $200 bill because of the mandatory sewer hookup fee.
Right.
Now, if there's 100 units in a hotel, does the hotel get in charged for 100 units hookup fee or only one hookup fee? And so we're looking at trying to get more parity here. So I've proposed something. I kept the numbers blank, and I offered to everyone that attended the town hall meeting, which I filmed, which I try to get there, just like I filmed the landfill meeting I had.
Right.
And with this, I said, do you think that we should be charging the visitor industry because the city and county can't tax? We don't have the authority to tax.
Right.
But so if we could assess something on their non-residential and carve out just the hotel industry so we don't hurt the small businesses, but
right.
Rather look at the visitor.
Hold that thought. I got a caller here. But also,
yeah.
You know, I'm hearing a lot from you, and I appreciate it, but it seems like you're in a track of you're making films and you're filming and you're having town hall meetings. Why not strap on the guns and go file some criminal complaints and let's enough of the videos and all of that? I mean, because
okay.
People ain't got time to sit and watch the video and then come back out and work to pay the water bill. Hold on 1 second.
Sure.
Good morning, Carl. You have a comment or question?
Yeah, I've been listening to this for a while, you know, all these town hall meetings and hearings and all this thing. I think they should take a lead by Kimberly Pine. She made a statement a while back. She said, we are just humans. We should seek guidance by a higher power. So I think that's a problem. Maybe city council is not seeking guidance or legislature by this higher power that Kimberly Pine's referring to. Maybe this higher power should attend these meetings. I don't know who this higher power she's referring to that can get involved in assisting us in making correct decisions.
I bet you $50 or tomorrow and next year and on, if but we don't bet. But that Tom, you have an answer for that one.
I'll listen.
Well, there's two kinds of higher powers. There's higher authority, whether it's those that bring folks in compliance, if it's higher authority as in a federal government or state government on local issues, but Rep. Pine being a state representative would be then asking, I believe, the federal government to participate more. You know, we have a lot of regional offices in California.
No. The Kimberly Pine that I know looks to a higher power.
As with religious connotations.
Everything that she talks about, even cyber crimes, she thinks the solution is a higher power. So we don't, we want, it's the same person to turn a marina into a triathlete, a muddy hole to swim in. So go ahead.
Is the caller still on?
No, I'm sure he'll call back if you said the right thing or the wrong thing.
Well, if he's looking for something of religious connotations to be a party to government, if he can get that cleared with our U.S. Supreme Court, I'm sure many politicians would like to interject of greater magnitude reference to a higher power. Now, higher powers don't write bills. Higher powers don't testify. Higher powers don't mitigate things here for us. It's having faith. If that is what I indeed understand, the callers.
I can probably go out on a limb and answer that one for you. None of these politicians would know what a higher power is. The way they treat the homeless, the way they treat animals, way they lie and steal and cheat, and the way they sucker and drain the income of people that are on fixed income, the way they leave the housings and what have you, and the state housing, and then the way they rip us off with the potholes. Who could wake up in the morning and believe in God and then turn around and say, we're going to raise your taxes to fix the potholes that we took millions from you last year to take, They wouldn't know a higher power if it was sitting next to them. There is not a politician in this town that knows a higher power. They may wear, and Carlisle, for example, you look at his picture. He photographed there at the Catholic Church, one of the pictures he got of his official. But they don't act godly, so the caller was right. What is the high authority?
Well,
go
I just
ahead.
Want to, Carol, could I say this very quickly, though?
Mm-hmm.
I wake up every day with the attitude and a mindset, not just being one paycheck away, but actually being homeless. What would it be like to have the biting ants and the mosquitoes eat me up, and I'm scared for myself and my belongings? Where am I going to be? How am I going to feed myself? I wake up every day thinking I'm in that predicament, and what is government doing? We have 30,000 acres of fallow ag land, and I've always been saying, let's grow families, not weeds. And I have temporary measures with housing using retrofitted shipping containers, modular, prefabricated, to bring onto the landscape to actually put folks in for less than a car payment. They'd be getting shelter, and they could bring their pets. So I've tried to, as you know, on my website and on some television news coverage at town hall meetings, I've even advocated for a tent city and or, the safe zones, however you want to label it. Do something rather than this talk about affordable housing that no one has a true funding mechanism of a funding formula. If you're going to have it fee simple, it's $250,000 on up. That's not affordable. If it's going to be rentals, we, the taxpayer, are subsidizing it. Why is the city trying to liquidate and sell leasehold the properties that they have for affordable housing? Because it's a lose-lose for the taxpayer. So if somebody find out a better way or a better means, and what I'm doing is that higher power, I'm trying to bring that full circle, and I have many out-of-the-box solutions. So if you check out my website, you'll see some of my ideas.
Okay, well, thank you. Anything else real quickly? And please don't hesitate to call back. And I just say you would talk about APEC, but we don't want to talk about that because
that's a whole show.
That would go on and on and on. And
landfill contested case hearing February 8th before the Planning Commission. This is on the 15-year extension for Wamanola Gulch. March, the Blue Panel will be meeting. Follow the website, opala.org, so we can keep track of the landfill issue. And again, the Waianae Sustainable Communities Plan, some of the callers that discussed earlier, February 9th, City Hall, 9 a.m., Planning Zoning Committee, and then February 15th, for all your listeners, the City Council will be meeting full council February 15th at Kapolei.
Okay. Hey, well, thank you, Councilman Berg. I appreciate you calling in. And we're going to have next week Panos and Cliff Slater and others going to be on. And we're going to be talking about rail, so you might want to call in and share your ideas or what have you. And the concern I have, and real quick, are they going to keep the taxes and take the money? Let's say if they defeat the rail, if Cayetano defeats the rail, is he going to keep the money and then put it into something else and will still be paying taxes?
First of all, he can't keep the money. He can't not release the funds, because if he vetoes a budget with the HART funds and appropriation in it, he needs four council members to sustain the veto. So for everyone to think if Ben Cayetano wins to stop the rail, it's moot unless there are four, a minimum of four council members in office to sustain his veto of such budget. So let's assume that happened. Answer your question is, can he has to have Act 247, Hawaii Session Laws 2005 amended, to allow to use for such outside of the GET rail surcharge for other expenditures. Right now, it's attached at the hip. You can't deviate. It must go towards rail.
Okay. All righty. Well, thank you.
You're
welcome. I appreciate
you
calling.
Thank you.
Aloha.
Bye-bye.
Well, for those of you out there that'll go, we went easy on him. No, you have the opportunity to call in, and as you know, we've said some harsh things and about the councilman, and we'll continue if it's appropriate, and that goes for anybody out there. And when you see the conditions that some of the seniors, and I drive by there at Punch Bowl in Baratania, and there's a person that sits there, a human being that sits there with the walker, and we don't have the heart to address those issues, and we're sucking the blood of seniors and others that don't have the ability to pay anyway, and it's getting out of hand, and I don't know what the answer is, but it sure isn't in politics. So anyway, and speaking of politics, you know, we had a discussion a week or so ago about GMOs, genetically modified organisms. And there was a concern about a bill that was a labeling bill, HB 2746, and relating to the labeling of genetically engineered of Hawaii's residents feel that it is very important that genetically modified fruit be labeled. Numerous nations, including European Union, Japan, and China, require labeling of genetically engineered foods. West Hawaii Today reported on. Now, this is from the state legislators' website, and HB 2746 is now was referred to Chairman Clarence Nishihara and Vice Chair Senate District 2 Gilbert Kahele, and apparently. It can't, he's scheduling it for a hearing, or won't schedule it for a hearing, and there's some concerns. So I just did a little checking, and this is not to say that, you know, because a lobbyist give you money, you're going to cave into them. But I have to say that, I want to read you, I decided to, why is it that Nishihara is holding this bill up or won't schedule it for a hearing? Now, things may have changed since I was first informed of this, but at the time that I was looking into it, I went and looked at the contributions received, campaign contributions received, and the first one out of the hole is Monsanto Company. They donated some $500 to Nishihara, and they state that 4/26/2011, they gave him the money. Now, this bill would affect Monsanto directly. Monsanto, as I read in various articles and other sources, indicate that Monsanto does not agree with labeling and does not entertain that. But yet, Clarence Nishihara got a donation of a contribution. Then I look further. I see John Ratcliffe, who is also a lobbyist for Monsanto. And then I look again, and I see Maluafiti, Alicia Maluafiti, who is the Lo'ihi Communications and also the Hawaii Agriculture Corporation. I get the right name. But it's strange that one senator would hold up a bill, and then you look at their donations and contribution, and you have three people, lobbyists and what have you, and Monsanto itself, who has an interest in this. So why wouldn't Ishihara hold that bill up? Why? And also, it's something's wrong. And this is not to say that he's guilty of anything, but it sure smells funny and fishy that he would lend himself to that and would hold that bill. That, if he has changed his mind and will schedule it, then fine. But if you want to comment or call Senator Nishihara, and if you believe that at minimum you should be entitled or you're entitled to know what you're eating and what people are selling you, you would think, and if you'd like to call and encourage him to sign or hear the bill, at least schedule it. You can call him at 586-6970, 586-6970, and then Gilbert Kahele is at 586-6760. Now, again, I know some of you say, well, okay, you know, just because you take a donation, and that's true. Donations, anyone can take them. Don't mean you sold your soul. But the problem here is we have a bill that is simply informing the public, and they refuse to schedule it for hearing. I don't know what's up with that, but something's really strange about it. And Mr. Nishihara, if you're listening or if your staff is listening, or please, let's do something about this. And so as of 6/16/2011, there was... Miss Don, per the Hawaii State Ethics Commission, these are registered lobbyists as of 6/16/2011. Don M. Bicoy, B-I-C-O-Y. There's Cindy Goldstein for Pioneer Hybrid International. There is Paul Kohler for K-O-E-H-L-E-R for Monsanto Company. And there is Alicia Maluafiti, who is tied in, and she has the Community Association and Institute that she does for. And then also the Hawaii Crop Improvement Association. That was the name that, and there are, if you Google that, you'll see there's some relationship with Monsanto. And then we look at George Morris, who is also a Monsanto company lobbyist. This is straight from the state. Then there's Syngenta James Pakopak. And then there's Frederick J. Perlack. And Frederick J. Perlack is involved in this this process that he's also there doing lobbying for Monsanto and registered. And then there's John Ratcliffe, who the records indicate that Monsanto company. Good morning, caller. Come in a question.
I apologize. Tom Burke calling
yeah,
back.
Yeah.
You hit a nerve with me. I was the only vote on the council. It was an 8-1, and I was the one asking for the right to know. And when the counties, the rest of the neighbor islands, had passed a resolution to, urging the state legislature to pass a law to allow for the labeling on genetically modified or genetically engineered foodstuffs, that we have the right to know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I stood strong. And I'm really proud of what you're doing right now, because it rubs me the wrong way to see how the bills don't even get heard when you attach and follow what your listeners are hearing. Where's the money? How much money did they get who are in power? Who's chair of agricultural committee? Did they take XYZ dollars so that they hold these things up? So I've just emailed you. I'm having a town hall meeting on this very subject. I'm not going to take up more of your time. You gave me so graciously so much time this morning, but I had to call in and back you up on what you're saying. I saw it firsthand at the council, 8-1 vote, just to let people have the right to know. I've introduced a resolution, 12-7, to advance discussions to try to get the legislature also to take heed on this. You know, Patsy Mink was the last congressional person representing Hawaii who sponsored a measure at Congress for us to have the right to know. So right before she passed, she was on that side. She was advocating for this. And since then, we haven't had anyone in office at the helm advocating for us to have the right to know and fighting for us. So I got a town hall meeting. I gave you the information via email. I'll hang up, but I really enjoy what you're talking about this because this affects every consumer.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Aloha. Now, I want to go further, and you know, what's in, as Mufi Hanneman said, it's in the poi. Well, I just thought I'd take another, just look one more layer, and I want to share with you how this game is played in the town here of who's who and who knows who. Well, I've told you that there was Fred Perlock listed as a lobbyist, and if you see that, Frederick J. Perlock, and then I mentioned Malua Fiti, Alicia. Now, there is an organization, a nonprofit, they do good for dogs. And Frederick J. Perlack is a PhD. He's a treasurer of Poi Dogs in Popoke. And the secretary of that is Blake Oshiro. And Dev Braganza is who's also with the Hunt Development and what have you. And so when you look at this, it seems it's quite innocent, but how is it that Senator Nishihara could entertain or accept money from anyone and then simply refuse not to make a decision on a bill or anything, but just to schedule it for hearing? He's been eating too much modified food. And just as a little humor, go and look and see for his gifts disclosed. You think there was someone, he had a sweet tooth, so someone's given him food of some kind, of some sort. And yet, he will not schedule the bill for hearing. That's an insult. And this is a man who comes from the educational system. So how would one be so, that taught us so well and shepherded us through with our education, but as it becomes a senator, he refused to educate us further where we could walk in the store, look at a packet, and tell if it's genetically modified or if it poses a risk or a threat. It would be the equivalent of failing to label something that has peanuts in it. You know, peanuts can be deadly to some humans. And imagine Senator Nishihara having a bill before him that would inform a mother or a family that has a child that is can be easily sickened or killed by peanuts and refuse to even schedule a bill to put the label to say peanuts involved. So this is pretty big stuff, folks. Not a lot of money involved, you might say, but in this town you don't need but a couple of $100 and you can get a couple of more votes, and some people win by 100 or less votes. So there are some serious problems with this entire process. And then the Hawaii Crop Improvement Association, again, the agent is Malua Fiti, and again, on that staff is Fred Perlack, Adolph Helm, Phillipson, Mark, and Alika Napier, and on and on and on. So this isn't just something, it has all the makings of the senator has lent himself to, and I'll go and make that, draw that conclusion. It's there. There's three entities that lobby for or have relationship with Monsanto that have donated to him, and now he refuses to simply schedule a bill for hearing in his committee. I believe it's wrong. But anyway, speaking of bills, there's another bill, and this is unrelated to GMOs, but it probably has an indirect relationship in that HB 2652, a House bill, Mr. Herkes has scheduled this bill, and it's basically an assault, I'll describe it, on the Olelo situation. And in that, It is simply something you might want to follow. Some are saying that it's an attack on freedom of speech. He scheduled this bill, and then there are a great many people asking, all the way from Maui, Akaku, and someone forwarded me an email, and they're raising concern. And to describe how they reference it is, on the eve of the Super Bowl weekend, with nobody looking, an outrageous double cross happened at the state capitol. Last Friday, in a ploy designed to destroy public access TV, a very bad bill, HB 2652, was introduced in the House of Representatives, endorsed by cable giant Oceanic Time Warner, HB 2652, that would have cut the funding to Akaku and all community televisions in the state of by two-thirds, with the money being siphoned off by the state to the state coffers. The bill was introduced by Big Island Representative Herkes on Friday and set for a hearing on Monday, not giving anyone enough time to get testimony before his committee. Imagine that. So you have one guy who won't schedule a bill, a senator, and then you have another politician who rushes and schedules a bill. Something's not gelling here. And so if you're interested, you might want to call 586-6790 to speak to Representative Melly Carroll or Keith Agaron and others, and let them know. And again, Joe Suki. See, he wants to put cameras on the street to watch you and give you a ticket, but he doesn't want you to have a camera in your hand for public access so that you can bring out the improprieties or wrongdoings that may be incurred or experienced by these cameras. So the whole gang is just kind of crazy. And I just basically, repeating some of this, and those of you that sent me the emails, thank you, and I appreciate it. And we'll be seeing you next week again, and I hope that everything works out. Those of you that call in, thank you. And you can get this at carol@carolcox.com, and we'll talk some more, and we'll keep talking about GMO. But at minimum, I don't have any opinion one way or the other, but I think the public should be able to read what they're eating or at least be informed. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to the Carol Cox Show, heard every Sunday mornings from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. right here on K108. Tune in again next time for the Carol Cox Show.